Radio Prague News.
Smog alerts have been called off in several Czech regions, including Prague. The Prime Minister has overruled the President on a commission nominee over his dubious past. And the National Museum will be fully reopened following major renovations by the middle of 2020. Smog alerts have been called off in a number of regions in the Czech Republic, including Prague and central Bohemia. However, a fresh smog warning has been imposed in the Zlín region in southern Moravia. Most of the country's regions were declared to have excessively high levels of dust particles in the air at the end of last week. The authorities in Prague had been considering introducing temporary free public transport in a bid to reduce car numbers, but that idea has been dropped. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has rejected a nominee put forward by President Miloš Zeman for a commission examining who should be recognised as a member of the anti-communist resistance during the previous regime. Mr. Sobotka said that Mr. Zeman's candidate, Karel Srp, had done a lot for independent culture under communism. However, he said public information showed that Mr. Serp repeatedly informed to the STB secret police, though a court ruled in 2000 that his name had wrongfully been listed in STB records. Former members of the pre-1989 underground say he did indeed inform on them to the secret police. Last year, the Czech Republic received some 79.6 billion crowns more from the European Union than it paid into the coffers of the 27-member bloc. That's according to figures released on Tuesday by the Czech Ministry of Finance. It was the third highest net gain for the Czech Republic since it joined the EU in 2004. Prague's National Museum will be fully reopened following a major renovation job by the middle of 2020. Work on the institution's main building will stop in October next year for a large exhibition marking the 100th anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia in 1918, National Museum Director Michal Lukáš said on Tuesday. He made the comment after showing Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and Culture Minister Daniel Herman around the main building, which at present resembles a construction site. The number of recorded crimes in the Czech Republic fell by 12% year-on-year in 2016. That's according to figures released by the police on Tuesday. Deputy Police President Jaroslav Vild said crime had fallen in all regions of the country, including Prague, last year. Some 53% of the roughly 220,000 crimes registered were solved. The number of murders was at a 25-year low, Mr. Vild said. Police in Thailand have deported a Czech man wanted in his native country for knowingly spreading the HIV virus. Zdeněk Pfeiffer, who is 49, was arrested on the island of Phuket last week. He's accused of not informing dozens of male lovers that he had HIV. At least three contracted the disease. He could face up to 12 years in prison if found guilty of grievous bodily harm. The weather, it should be cloudy in the Czech Republic on Wednesday, with temperatures reaching up to minus 2 degrees Celsius. Temperatures are expected to remain below freezing point for at least another week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, diplomatic success for the Czech Republic in Syria, will Czech winters continue to be clouded by smog, and Czechs probe the secrets of birdsong. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czech diplomats have managed to negotiate the release of a Polish national jailed in Syria since 2015. According to a statement from the Office of the President, the man was released on humanitarian grounds and is reported to be in a satisfactory physical condition. Daniela Lazarova reports.
Leszek Banek, 54, went missing shortly after entering Syria from Lebanon in December 2015. Efforts to trace him proved fruitless, and it was only last year that news emerged of his whereabouts. He was in a Syrian prison, having been captured by Syrian forces and charged with activities linked to terrorism, for which he was likely to face a death sentence. Polish media featured reports which described the man as unbalanced, saying he had caused disturbances in Poland, travelling around the country to announce a pending nuclear apocalypse. Polish efforts to negotiate his release failed, and last year they turned to the Czech Republic, the only EU country which operates an embassy in Syria, for help. Following months of negotiations, the Czech Republic was able to announce the man's release on Monday. He was handed over to the Czech ambassador in Syria, Eva Filippi, and then transported to the Polish embassy in Lebanon. He was reported to be in satisfactory physical condition and was using crutches after having been shot in the leg during his arrest. While the Czech Foreign Ministry said it would not be releasing a statement or giving details of the successful diplomatic mission, the Czech President's chief foreign policy adviser, Hynek Mojicek, who travelled to Lebanon for the handover, had high praise for Czech diplomats in Syria, telling the news site Novinky.cz that the credit lay fully with the Czech ambassador to Syria, Eva Filippi, and the respect she had built up in the country. Without the empathy and energy of Ambassador Filippi in Syria and Ambassador Frankova in Lebanon, we would have been powerless, Mr. Kmonicek said. The Czech embassy in Syria, which represents all EU member states in the country and is also protective power for the United States, has established good working relations with all parties in the Syrian conflict and is the sole distributor of EU humanitarian aid in the country. On a visit to Prague last year, Syrian Deputy Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad had high praise for the Czech ambassador's work.
You have an excellent ambassador who, irrespective of the very dangerous situation, difficult situation in Syria, remained with the Syrian people. She is carrying also responsibilities not only for the Czech Republic, but for some European countries, and also for the United States. All our discussions with the United States were carried through here. She visited American prisoners who were caught, in Syria, because they entered Syria illegally. And she went to the prison, met these people, took books and medicine and cigarettes, reported on their health and so on. And some of them were released because of Czech assistance. And if it were not for the Czech Republic to be represented in Syria, such a thing would never happen.
Eva Filippi, who last year received a high state distinction for her work in diplomatic service, is a highly respected professional in her field. Last year, Parliament passed an amendment to the civil service law allowing ambassadors over the age of 70 to continue in their posts, since the conditions originally set down would have meant her leaving office.
Daniela Lazareva there reporting. Now, the Czech Republic has been experiencing the worst case of smog pollution in recent years. The maximum for airborne dust particles has been exceeded in most parts of the country for nearly a week. People with respiratory diseases and heart conditions, as well as elderly people and children, were advised to limit outdoor activities, and regulations curbing the activities of the biggest polluters have been declared in several regions, including Prague. Ruth Frankova spoke to Andrej Velček of the Czech Hydrometeorological Office and asked him, first of all, what the situation is now.
Concerning concentration of particulate matter, which were the reason for the announcement of the smog situation in the last few days, the situation is slowly improving, and there was especially a rapid improvement since the noon on Sunday, when the ground temperature inversion was disturbed and it moved upwards, so the emissions from the sources could disperse in the atmosphere.
How serious is the situation when you compare it to the previous years? How serious is it?
It's not possible to make direct comparison because of changing rules in the smog warning and regulation system. Nevertheless, if we look at the concentrations on the stations, we can say that the situation is really unusual within the perspective of the last few years.
So what are the main factors behind the current air pollution?
The main factor is, of course, meteorological situation. Since 19th of January, there was a very strong temperature inversion which reached the ground. So the air pollution from the sources, from the traffic, local heating, and also from low-level industrial sources could not disperse in the atmosphere.
Authorities in Prague have repeatedly called on drivers not to use their cars. To what extent do drivers contribute to smog by using their cars?
It depends what region we are talking about. If we are talking about Prague, then we can really say that the cars are the main contributors to the smog situation. Of course, if we would like to reduce their emission, there would have to be really some drastic limitations on their usage. So I don't see that would be something what politicians would decide to go for.
What kind of immediate measures can be taken to improve the situation?
I think that actually we cannot do any measures which would improve the situation. We can try to do some measures which would help not to make the situation even worse, which means try to limit the emissions, for example, from the traffic or from the local heating. I don't mean that people shouldn't heat their homes by solid fuel stoves, but they should try really to follow the correct operation instructions and try to limit the emissions.
Is the situation likely to improve in the coming weeks?
We can expect that in the next few days the concentrations will be probably slowly decreasing, and there could be some improvement on Thursday when a numerical weather prediction model Aladdin gives us better values of the ventilation index. But it really depends on the development of the weather situation.
Andrei Vilcek ending that report by Ruth Frankova. And staying with Ruth, it's well-known fact that there are various dialects in the human language, but not everyone is perhaps aware that the same holds true for birdsong. A new study by Czech scientists has researched the dialects of the yellowhammer, a tiny bright yellow bird of the bunting family, and they've shed light on the cultural evolution of birdsong. Scientists revealed that the original yellowhammer dialects, thought to have been extinct in Great Britain, have survived in birdsong overseas, particularly in the New Zealand immigrants. Ruth Frankova.
This is a song of the yellowhammer, a sparrow-sized bunting typical for its bright yellow head and belly. The bird is native to Europe and Asia, but was also successfully introduced to other parts of the world, namely New Zealand, Australia and South Africa. The yellowhammer is hard to miss not only for its colour, but also for its typical song, known as A Little Bit of Bread and No Cheese in English and Jak to sluníčko pěkně svítí in Czech, meaning See How Brightly the Sun Shines. In a project called Yellowhammer Dialects, a team of Czech scientists focused on the research of the yellowhammer songs. They encouraged volunteers in the UK and New Zealand to collect and submit recordings of yellowhammers using their smartphones or cameras. They subsequently compared the patterns of yellowhammer dialects in the native parts of Great Britain and in the areas of New Zealand where the birds were introduced in the mid-19th century to discover that birdsong dialects evolve in analogy to human languages. I asked Pavel Pipek, a lead author of the study, if it was common for all bird species to develop dialects in their songs.
It's true just for several groups of birds. It's true for passerines. It's true also for parrots and hummingbirds. And you can really see dialects among these groups. Similar to humans, birds learn their vocalization, in this case singing, from their parents or neighbors. So it's not something innate. It's related to many things, like migratory strategies, for example. If the species is resident, it's more easy for them to develop dialects. Similarly, it's important how many songs they can master, if I can say it like that.
The history of the yellowhammer dialect research dates back to 2011, when the Czech Society for Ornithology chose yellowhammer as the bird of the year, drawing attention to the fact that populations of farmland birds have been rapidly declining. To raise awareness of the problem, they set up a citizen science project asking people to send in their amateur recordings of the Yellowhammer songs. To their surprise, dozens of volunteers responded, prompting the scientists to carry on with the research and extend it beyond the Czech Republic's borders. Pavel Pipek explains why their next steps led to Great Britain and New Zealand.
When I realized that Yellowhammers were introduced to New Zealand, it fascinated me, like that we can compare like what happened with this song after 150 years of complete isolation from the native source, from Great Britain. Basically, we were interested what really happened with that song. I was interested to see if these localities from which the birds were caught and then transported, if they returned the same dialects from Britain.
Some 600 yellowhammers were introduced to New Zealand back in the 1860s and 1870s to help local farmers fight with crop pests, namely caterpillars and black field crickets. The native birds were not available to do the job because they gradually disappeared as the settlers cleared away the country's forests.
The thing is that in New Zealand there were like very big landscape changes at the beginning of colonization. New plants were introduced, like new crops, and these crops were target of plagues of insects. So the thing is, there was that New Zealanders wanted to get rid of these insect pests originally, and they came up with the idea to bring English birds, because they are eating insects for sure, they are feeding their chicks in summer, but the choice was not the best, because ironically, although yellowhammers were originally introduced as a biological control against pests, in fact, in the end, they became pests themselves, along with the sparrows and greenfinches. So although New Zealanders originally imported those birds, in less than 20 years they started to kill them with poison and other means of destruction.
To trace the journey of the yellowhammer birds from the United Kingdom to New Zealand proved to be a detective's work. Scientists used original documents such as letters, bills and minutes from meetings kept by the so-called acclimatization societies, organizations founded especially to introduce new animals and plants to New Zealand. Pavel Pipek again.
The thing is that I really had to have detailed knowledge about the history of yellowhammers if I wanted to compare what happened with the song, of course. I was skeptic at the beginning that it won't be very easy, but I find out that actually a lot of information is hidden in newspapers. Many people probably know that, but for me it was like discovering America, that in New Zealand there is archive of newspapers. From 19th century it's digitalized and it's searchable by keywords. So since then, this was a like very important source of my research.
Although they expected New Zealand yellowhammers to exhibit fewer dialects than those in the mother country, quite the opposite pattern emerged. Surprisingly, New Zealand boasted nearly twice as many yellowhammer dialects as the United Kingdom. In one case, Pipek has identified one locality in Brighton from which birds were shipped to Otago on the southern island of New Zealand. Yet, when they compared the dialects of the yellowhammer in these two localities, they turned out to be completely different.
So this led us to simple explanation that probably in the past these dialects were in Britain too, but that they only disappeared in recent population decline. Because while in New Zealand yellowhammers are still thriving, in Britain they experience rapid population decline because of changes in agricultural praxis. In last 40 years, the population dropped like 60%. So it's possible that some of the rare dialects just disappear because of this population decline.
Apart from bringing a fascinating story of lost birds' dialects, Pavel Pipek says the research also has a number of practical implications for other fields of research, for instance, invasion ecology.
People are interested in what's behind successes of some of the invaders while others are failing. And the common sense explanation for this is the numbers of individuals which were imported, which is definitely influencing the outcome of any interaction event. Some of the things can be fairly theoretical, like that we want to look if there are some barriers in gene flow, for example. I mean that the populations which are singing differently are not mixing with each other, which might be not that important in our region, for example, but has huge implications in conservation ecology. Other thing is that it was shown that when the population is decreasing, it affects the patterns of dialect distribution. Therefore, one of the things which you can also use dialects for is maybe for monitoring the state of the population. The songs can actually indicate that there is something happening even on the population level.
Czech scientists are now hoping that their project will develop even further and have invited other countries to join in with their own citizen science projects. Meanwhile, volunteers can still join in the ongoing projects in the Czech Republic, United Kingdom and New Zealand.
Citizen science is a field which is rapidly expanding in recent years, and it's mostly thanks to technological development, I would say. For example, with smartphones, every volunteer can collect really high-quality data. So citizen science basically means that it should be like mutual cooperation of scientists and volunteers. It should be really like enriching for both sides. For scientists, it means that they can collect large-scale data, for example. And for the volunteers from public, it also has, of course, some benefits, like reasonable involvement, direct touch with science. They can get new knowledge, new skills. I hope at least that our project is a good example of citizen science.
Pavel Pipek there, ending that report by Ruth Frankova. If you've any comments, good, bad, about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely pleased to hear from you. But for me, Chris Johnston, that rounds up my presentation for today. Thank you very much for joining us.